In this, the fourth installment of the tale of how Reb Baruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, became a chosid of the Baal Shem Tov, we are up to the point where Reb Baruch had gone to the town of Dobromzhil, where he had first gone 4 years earlier, and where he had stayed by Eliezer Reuven the Schmidt, Eliezer Reuven the Smithy, and after the 4 years he was going to stay by him for Pesach, having spent quite a long time before that by Rav Avrom Zev, the gardener in Lozhne, but he didn't want to stay by him for Pesach, and here he was on his way to Bashenkovich to learn by the great Avrom Zev of Bashenkovich, and by Pesach time, when it came to Pesach time, he had arrived at the Dobromzhil, and he was spending Pesach at the Dobromzhil. And coming there, Baruch remembered very clearly his first meeting with the smithy of the Dobromzhil, Rabbi Eliezer Reuven, who Baruch at that time was only 14 years old, and he had settled down to study in the Beis HaMedrash of the Dobromzhil, determined not to accept help from anybody. And as a result, he never suffered hunger. One day, a man whom he had several times noticed in the Beis HaMedrash came up to him. He did not know who he was or what was his name. The stranger greeted him very warmly and said, "My name is Eliezer Reuven. I am a smith, and I have a smithy on the outskirts of the town of Dobromzhil, on the road leading to Lozhne. I live nearby and could do with someone to help me in my smithy. If you feel you would care for such a job, I would provide you with food and drink and a place to sleep." Baruch was overjoyed. This was exactly what he wanted. He was prepared to do the hardest work as long as he could earn his own piece of bread without having to come on to anybody else's help. Baruch, however, had one condition to make of Eliezer Reuven. "Pay me whatever you wish, but let it be in cash. I leave it to your own discretion. I do not want to eat at the table of strangers, nor do I wish to sleep in the homes of strangers," said Baruch resolutely. The smith was agreeable. He promised Baruch a certain wage, and Baruch was satisfied. Baruch soon arrived at the smithy and did his work most conscientiously. The whole day long he worked for the smith, and in the evening he used to go to the Beis HaMedrash and study with much enthusiasm. Baruch now had the opportunity of observing Eliezer Reuven and began to feel a great deal of respect for him, for he saw greatness in this simple man. As the smith stood all day at his anvil, hammering the red-hot iron, he recited Tehillim as an accompaniment. He recited capital after capital, verse after verse, and chapter after chapter, and in fact knew the entire Tehillim bal peh. He knew it all by heart. The smith's customers were the peasants of the surrounding villages, who used to bring him their horses for shoeing, their wagons for repairing, and their plows and harrows when they needed to be put into order. Baruch had long noticed with what exceptional honesty and devotion Eliezer Reuven treated his customers. He would never overcharge them even a fraction of a cent. Once Baruch noticed something which made a deep impression upon him. A peasant from a nearby village had brought his horse to Eliezer Reuven for shoeing, and at the same time also brought him a wheel which had to be repaired for his wagon. Another peasant had brought his horse to have four new shoes put on, and when the time came to ask for the money, Eliezer Reuven charged this peasant the amount he should have charged the first one. That is to say, he overcharged him by six very, very small coins, like six pennies. Both peasants had already gone away when Elazar Reuven realized his error. He was so upset about it that despite the smallness of the overcharge, he immediately set out on foot to the village where this peasant lived, which was a distance of about 3 miles, in order to give him back the money. Baruch was staggered. He had never seen such meticulous righteousness on the part of an ordinary person. He asked the smith if he really thought it worthwhile to walk the 6 mile distance for a matter of 6 groschen. To which Eliezer Reuven replied, "It is written of the people who lived before the flood that they were so rotten that they did not disdain to rob a man of less even than a pruta," which is a very, about 6 cents. "Do you want me then to be even worse than the wicked people of that generation and rob a man of 6 groschen? Eliezer Reuven was not only particular in his attitude towards his fellow men, but also in his attitude towards Hashem. Every morning and every evening, in summer as well as in winter, in rain and in snow, he used to go to the Beis HaMedrash. He was not satisfied merely to come and daven there. He also took the opportunity of learning some Torah. He, like so many more workers, belonged to the Chevra Tilim, where the entire Tilim would be recited before the davening, the Chevra in Yankov, where they would study sections of the Agoda of the Gemara, and the Chevra Midrash, where there was a regular shir in the Midrash. In addition, Eliezer Reuven was also a subscriber to all the charitable organizations of the town, and always paid his dues punctually. Baruch not only learned to know and appreciate this remarkable smith, but also became acquainted with his neighbor, who used to be a frequent visitor of Eliezer Reuven's. This neighbor's name was Zevulun Ben Yomin, and he was of immense height. His shoulders were broad and strong, and his hands were long and powerful. He was dark-complexioned, and his forehead was small. His voice was dull, and so was his brain. This Zevulun Ben Yomin was an ignorant man, and yet he was a big Yerushalayim. He was a God-fearing individual. Zevulun Ben Yomin at first hardly knew the Olive Base, but by degrees, and in the course of many years, and after much effort, for with his poor brain power it did indeed require the greatest possible effort, he at long last managed to learn to daven the weekday service and to make a blessing on the Torah. On Shabbos and Yontif, he could only follow the Shaliach Tzibur. In comparison with Zvulun Ben Yomin, Eliezer Reuven the smithy was quite a Talmud Chochem. The smith treated this neighbor very kindly, especially as Zvulun Ben Yomin obviously showed how keenly he felt about his ignorance and the weakness of his brain power. When Zvulun Ben Yomin visited Eliezer Reuven, particularly on Shabbos, Eliezer Reuven always made a point of telling him the stories he had heard in the Beis HaMedrash while learning in Yankov and Medrash. Zvulun Ben Yomin positively swallowed every word that came from the lips of the smith. Having lived all his life amongst non-Jews, Zvulun Ben Yomin did not know any Yiddish. The smith therefore translated everything for him into Polish. As it happened, Eliezer Reuven knew Polish rather well, and so it was not difficult for him to explain these matters, which he himself perhaps only understood superficially, to Zvulun Ben Yomin. The smith's lively talk in Polish often attracted non-Jews, who would gather around and listen with great interest to the stories that Eliezer Reuven would tell out of the Ein Yankov and the Medrash, scratching their heads and shouting approvingly, "Dobrze, dobrze, pan Rufke, very good, Master Reuven." The manner in which Eliezer Reuven the smith tried to teach Zvulun Ben Yomin, so far removed from spiritual matters, greatly impressed Baruch, and became permanently engraved on his mind. It showed him the real depth and beauty of the Jewish soul, This smith, apparently quite an ordinary person himself, and very little learned, yet went to no end of trouble to impart that little knowledge that he did know to one who knew even less than he. This feeling of love and responsibility for one another, Baruch felt, was the secret of the power that held Jews together and that held Yiddishkeit together. Baruch acquired a greater interest in the Smith's Talmud, Zebulun Binyamin. What he could not find out for himself, he inquired of his employer. He found out that Zebulun Binyamin was born and bred in a village among non-Jews. His father used to do all manner of rough work. He used to dig ditches and also occasionally deal in horses. He was something of an expert in his knowledge of cattle and horses. He also knew a great deal about their sicknesses and how to cure them. So much so that peasants and even their squires used to bring their sick beasts to him for veterinary treatment. Until Zebulun Binyamin became bar mitzvah, he hardly knew anything of Yiddishkeit. When his father died, he was not even able to say Kaddish for his departed soul. Zebulun Binyamin followed in his father's footsteps for earning his livelihood, having inherited some veterinary knowledge from him. When Zebulun Binyamin married, he settled on the outskirts of the town and became a neighbor of Eliezer Reuven. Eliezer Reuven showed great friendliness towards him and awakened within him a desire to keep up Yiddishkeit. Under Eliezer Reuven's guidance, Zebulun Binyamin made fair progress despite the fact that he was such an ignorant man. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, Zebulun Binyamin used to stand in the Beis HaMedrash with a talus over his head and never shed bitter tears. This was already after he had engaged a teacher to teach him to read Hebrew. Before this, he used to have the same teacher to help him at home with his prayers. Eliezer Reuven the smith was very proud of Zebulun Binyamin. He felt proud of the fact that it was due to him that such a remote member of the Jewish people as was Zebulun Binyamin should have turned so enthusiastically to Judaism. In other circumstances, he might have remained among non-Jews, or even amongst Jews, he might yet have called upon himself their ridicule at his excessive ignorance, and thus become discouraged and dispirited. Eliezer Reuven, however, won him over with love and fussed over him as he were his very own child. Zebulun Binyamin found in the smith both a friend and a teacher, and acquired a love not only towards God, but also towards his fellow beings. And thus he gave a great deal of charity and showed great respect for the Talmidei Chachamim, those well-learned in Torah. He and his wife engaged a scribe, a sefer, to write out a sefer Torah, which they presented to the Beis HaMedrash. They also took into their home three orphan children, whom they treated as their own. They engaged the best available teachers for them, and for their sons as well, and they all grew up Talmidei Chachamim, scholars, Torah scholars. Baruch helped the smith at the smithy for some considerable length of time, and felt that he had found in him not only a source of income, but also a spiritual guide. He found much to admire and learn from this ordinary, simple soul. Thus the winter passed, and Pesach drew near. Eliezer Reuven invited Baruch to spend the Yom Tov at his house. "All the time you refuse to eat at my table, but you can't eat alone on Pesach," the smith said to him. Baruch, however, made it a condition of his acceptance that the smith would allow him to pay for his meals. "Why, that's out of the question," replied the smith, shocked at the idea of taking money from a poor boy for hospitality, achnosas orchem, on Yom Tov. Baruch explained to him that it was a matter of principle with him, and that it was for this reason that he had voluntarily become a wanderer, so that he could earn his living by the toil of his own hands, and not need to accept charity from anyone. He did not tell him, however, the other reason for his self-chosen exile, namely, that he did not want people to find out that he was already a great Torah scholar. Although Baruch tried to hide his vast erudition from Eliezer Reuven, nevertheless, Eliezer Reuven saw that here was no ordinary boy, for he quoted with ease passages from the Tanakh and from Maimonides Chazal to support his arguments about not having to stay or eat by him for free on Pesach. The smith began to understand and appreciate the boy's reasons and agreed to his condition. Baruch now had the opportunity of observing how the smith made preparations for the Holy Yom Tov, and also how he kept the Chag HaPesach, the festival of Pesach. Everything made a great impression upon him. Baruch saw that it was possible to be a sincerely observant Jew, even if one were not very learned. 3 days before Yom Tov, Eliezer Reuven left his work at the smithy and set about preparing the house for the coming festival. Customers brought their wagons for repairing and their horses for shoeing. Eliezer Reuven could have earned a pretty penny, but he sent them all away, explaining to them that it was on account of his holy festival. Baruch noted all this, and acquired an even greater respect for his employer, who, after all, barely managed to make ends meet. Very few people, he felt, would have been prepared to make a similar sacrifice of earnings under the same circumstances. But Eliezer Reuven had a more important job to see to, which was to see that everything in the house was thoroughly and adequately kosher for Pesach. No time this for money making. He had to see that every part of the house, every stick of furniture was turned out and washed and scrubbed, aired and dusted. He whitewashed the house and changed the old bricks in the oven for new ones. Every corner of the house received his attention, and the house looked so spick and span, it fairly gleamed with cleanliness. On the day before Yom Tov, Eliezer Reuven went to the baths, and changed into new Yom Tov clothes. When he came home, Baruch accompanied him to the Beis HaMedrash. They returned home and somehow felt the difference in the atmosphere. The house sparkled, and there was a real Yom Tov spirit in the air. Eliezer Reuven, his wife, his daughters, and his only son all seemed to look different. The neshama of Shabbos and Yom Tov, the soul of Shabbos and the holidays, shined in their eyes. When the time came to recite the Haggadah, Eliezer Reuven asked Baruch if he would like to translate and explain it to the household. Baruch was delighted to oblige. They all listened very attentively to his lucid and interesting explanations and observations. The tears came to Eliezer Reuven's eyes. Were these tears of pleasure, or perhaps tears of sorrow at the thought that his own son was such a dullard and barely knew a chapter of Chumash at that time? It was hard to say. All the efforts of Eliezer Reuven to make a scholar of his son, and he engaged the best teachers possible and spared no expense, seemed wasted on his dull brain, and this grieved the father very much indeed. Baruch did not forget the Pesach he spent at the home of Eliezer Reuven, and when the next Pesach came around, he went to him again. He was at that time living in another town, but decided to return to the Bromshul for Yom Tov to spend it with his former employer, for payment, of course. Eliezer Reuven, on his part, knowing already how Baruch felt about this matter, accepted without an argument. Baruch liked coming to Eliezer Reuven not only because he felt so completely at home there, but because Eliezer Reuven always imparted a spirit of true Yiddishkeit. Baruch never forgot the smith's consistency, honesty, and piety. All this Baruch recalled very clearly, and it made him look forward with eagerness to his next meeting with his friend, the smith of the Brumschel. On his arrival in the Brumschel from Lozhne, Baruch went straight to the smithy. The smith was wearing his leather apron and was wielding a hammer at the anvil. His son Shmuel Nochum was holding a red-hot iron in a vise over the anvil, and his father was striking it with his hammer with all his might. As in former years, he accompanied the strokes with the recitation of Tehillim. As soon as Elazar Reuven saw Baruch, he threw down his hammer, calling out in a delighted voice, "Look, Shmuel Nochum, what a welcome visitor we have!" The smith washed his hands and gave Baruch a hearty Shalom Aleichem. The next moment he was pouring out all that was on his mind. He spoke to Baruch as if he were his own child. "I must say that I am more than satisfied with my daughters," he told him. "They are married to fine, well-learned men and are nicely settled in the house I had built for them. My sons-in-law spend their time in learning, but as for my son Shmuel Nochum, I have to admit he's a great disappointment to me. I had hoped he too would be a Talmud Chochem, but unfortunately he has no talent whatsoever for studying." Eliezer Reuven told Baruch how he tried everything, even asking the Rav's advice on how to get Shmuel Nochum to learn. But the Rav advised him that under the circumstances, it would be better to put his son to a trade, that he should teach him a melacha. "Really, I didn't want this at all," Eliezer Reuven exclaimed to Baruch almost apologetically. "But what else could I do? And so I took Shmuel Nochum to work with me in my smithy, rather than let him go to work for someone else. While he's with me, I can at least keep an eye on him and help him to improve." Baruch tried to console the smith by pointing out that it is quite possible to be a fine, respected Jew, even if one is but a workman. And in fact, he gave Eliezer Reuven himself as a splendid example of the truth of his argument. But poor Eliezer Reuven was not so easily convinced, and it was obvious that he felt very disappointed in his only son, who would not make a student. Pesach finally arrived. On this particular Pesach, the house of Eliezer Reuven was entirely different. The smith's two sons-in-law were there, and they were real Talmid Chachomim. They had studied at the yeshiva in Vitebsk. Baruch spent hours discussing difficult Talmudic topics with them. At such times, Eliezer Reuven used to sit near and listen to their discussions with enormous interest, though understanding not a word. One could see that it gave him the greatest pleasure, and that he was in the seventh heaven of delight to have brought the Torah within the four walls of his humble abode. Baruch felt greatly at ease this time. It was no longer necessary for him to hide the scholarship lest he be thought to be superior. For sitting amongst these simple, honest, God-fearing, and Torah-loving people, whose only desire was to serve God and to keep his commandments in every detail, he felt absolutely at home. On the other hand, there was the smith's only son, Shmuel Nochum, sitting a little way apart in silence, obviously out of his element and with a sad expression on his face, as if to say, "What wouldn't I give to be able to participate in this Torah discussion, or at least to understand it?" Baruch was quick to notice Shmuel Nochum's distress, which aroused a wave of sympathy in him for the simple lad. He also could not fail to notice how Eliezer Reuven threw a glance at his son from time to time, shaking his head regretfully to himself at the fact that his son was not able to join his sons-in-law and Baruch in their discussions. This smith was apparently comparing his son with his sons-in-law, who were so learned, and perhaps even with Baruch, who by his own efforts, and despite all obstacles and difficulties, had attained such a high degree of learning. Looking at Shmuel Nochum's troubled face, Baruch conceived the idea of suggesting to his father that he send his son to a yeshiva and give him one more chance at studying Torah. For it was obvious from the way he had listened to the Torah scholars that Shmuel Nochum envied them their knowledge and hungered and thirsted for learning. And maybe that hunger and thirst would overcome his poor head. So Baruch said to the smith, "It's true that I previously said to you that it is possible to be a good and honest Jew even without being a scholar. I also maintain that labor is a worthy thing, and as you know, I too support myself by manual labor. I am not ashamed of doing any kind of honest work. But looking now at Shmuel Nochum, I have come to the conclusion that he ought to be given a chance to study Torah, and my advice is send him to a yeshiva." When Shmuel Nochum heard about Baruch's suggestion, he burst into tears and begged his father to allow him to go learn in yeshiva. "Please, father, permit me this." Rav Elezer Reuven agreed, and Baruch was as delighted as Shmuel Nochum at his opportunity to go and learn in yeshiva. Years later, Baruch heard that Shmuel Nochum had become a good Torah student and the son-in-law of a Talmud Chochem. This pleased him tremendously, for he felt that he had a share in Shmuel Nochum's new way of life and his success. He was also glad for the sake of the smith who had so yearned for his son to learn the Torah and become a scholar like his sons-in-law. What happened to Baruch after Pesach, we will tell in the fifth installment, Im Yirtzeh Hashem.